A Tiny Revolution features adults having adult conversations, which means that adult language is probably going to be present, just so you know. Before we begin today's episode, a quick warning about the content. In this episode of A Tiny Revolution, we're going to be explicitly discussing topics surrounding sexual assault, especially in religious settings. And as such, it may not be suitable for all listeners, including younger children. The conversation today might be upsetting or triggering for some listeners, and while we believe conversations like these are incredibly important to have, we also encourage you to practice good self-care and do what is best for you. So if you need to turn off this episode and return for the next episode, do that. If in the middle of the podcast you feel something coming up and you need to turn off the podcast and maybe return to it later or just discontinue listening, that's totally fine. Any feelings or emotions that you're having are valid. And if something comes up that you weren't expecting, perhaps go to a friend or maybe even your mental health professional to help process these things in a healthy way that leads you towards healing and not towards another negative headspace. Again, we're going to be discussing explicit topics surrounding sexual assault, especially in religious settings, so listener discretion is advised. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of A Tiny Revolution, a podcast with conversations with ordinary people living revolutionary lives. I'm Kevin Garcia, and welcome to episode 41. It has been quite a week for all of us, hasn't it? Between all the crap happening in the government to things blowing up on Twitter, namely the Church2 hashtag, which is a place where people are coming forward with their stories about sexual assault and violence happening in churches all across our country, which is why I wanted to jump on the line today with my friend Hannah Pash to talk about all these things. But before we get into our conversation and I introduce her, I just want to give a reminder that if you have not registered for the Gay Christian Network National Conference in Denver, Colorado, you can still do that. You can find all the information at gcnconf.com, and that's going to be the weekend of January 16th in Denver, Colorado. I'm going to be there. Everyone is going to be there. I'm going to be there. Matthias Roberts is going to be there. All the normal humans you've heard on this podcast are probably going to be there. So if you haven't already signed up, what are you doing? I mean, maybe it's a money thing and you just have to save up to get there, but by hook or by crook, I would love for you to be there. I'm going to be leading a workshop called Bridges Over Battle Lines, and we're going to talk about how to have difficult conversations and move stuff beyond the debate. And on top of that, I'm also going to be leading worship, which is my joy, as you know. So yeah, go to gcnconf.com. That's gcnconf.com. Get registered today, and I'll see you in Denver. All right, so just one more time. I know I had a big ominous content warning at the beginning of this podcast, but I just want to reiterate again that in this conversation, we are going to be discussing topics about sexual assault, especially in religious settings. So listener discretion is going to be advised. But a little bit about my friend and sister, Hannah Pash. Hannah Pash is a former resident of Nashville and recently jumped back into her desert dwelling of Phoenix, Arizona. She's a musician, a social worker, a budding public theologian, if I do say so myself, and she's also the co-creator of the hashtag Church2, which has been blowing up across media outlets everywhere, including Teen Vogue, Religious News Service. I think Time probably had a piece in there, and if they're not, Time, if you're listening, you probably should, but it's everywhere right now, and people are saying, wow, I had no idea, but there's so many people out there who are finally having a Me Too moment, and we're actually going to discuss the genesis of Church2 and how that all came about in this conversation. Hannah and I connected through our mutual friend Emily Joy, who was featured on the podcast a few episodes ago, and I wanted to get with her to discuss this conversation and how it's been a long time coming. Additionally, we discuss what we can do as a community to rally around folks who are coming forward with their stories of sexual assault, how the church needs to start addressing how we talk about sexual assault, and how we approach our theology surrounding sexuality, the body, and sexual ethics. So grab a cup of whatever you prefer, and let's chill with my friend, Hannah Pash.
Well, I am sort of a self-dubbed religious trauma researcher. I spent my entire life in ministry. I'm a missionary kid, pastor's kid, and former missionary myself. So I basically got the the trifecta going on there.
Where were you a missionary at? I actually didn't know that about you.
Yeah, I did missionary work in Morocco and Spain.
Huh.
As a young adult, and a lot of local evangelism. I grew up in Mexico, and did a lot of missions work with my parents. We were kind of like the posh family unit. Yeah. So, that was my upbringing. And then, as an adult, I shortly after graduating from college, I decided to go to Moody Theological Seminary, because that was what the cool kids were doing, i.e. my friends.
Right.
And I thought, you know, well, I got nothing else going on, I'll go to seminary. Mm-hmm. So I figured I already kind of like had the Bible figured, which was ridiculous, but also that's what I thought at 19.
And of course, so, we all did, right?
We all did. So I went to Moody Seminary with my friends. I signed up for the only thing that I didn't know what it was, which was urban studies. And that actually, interestingly enough, really set me down a trajectory of social justice. And we had a really cool professor there who taught me that reverse racism wasn't real, which was a thing that I argued for actively in class. So, you know, there's hope for us all, Kevin.
Praise God for the redemption.
Praise hands emoji. I went to seminary, and me and seminary just did not get along. I quickly, you know, sort of became the evangelical slut, if you will. I had the red A on her chest girl, because I had discovered lipstick and tight clothing. So, you know, and I wouldn't date the boys at seminary. So, of course, somehow that makes me a slut. How? I don't know. There's a lot of interesting logical jumps there. But thank heavens I met Emily Joy, and that was my best takeaway from seminary. But left there and sort of a couple of years later stumbled on what was at the time the like burgeoning progressive Christian blogging movement.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, Emily and I started exploring and having, you know, very wine fueled rants about purity culture.
Yeah.
And that was what we were raised in. And so, you know, both of us were approaching 23 and had never kissed another human being. And, so we started what we called the Purity Culture Rehab Project, and it was basically just like a blogging endeavor where we made a list of 15 things that we wanted to do to like help us unlearn purity culture, which in retrospect, we're very PG, you know, like losing our kissginity. Okay. We're like,
this is, so you wanted to kiss somebody.
We did. And then we would write about it. And you know, we had just discovered like Rachel Held Evans, and
she's the gateway drug.
She is the gateway drug, that, biblical womanhood, your biblical womanhood, that'll get you. But yeah, from there, Emily and I have done a lot of work in, purity culture and rape culture and like what having a positive, what having a sex positive theology could look like. And, so that's kind of been a part of our journey. And obviously we have both endured quite a bit of harassment and assaults, like both within and without the church, which kind of brings us to present day.
Yeah. So recently there was a dude on Twitter who identified you and Emily as a yoga teacher and a lesbian who started.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so like I tagged them, I'm just like, first of all, they are bisexual, both of them. I'm just like, so please don't, like, if you're gonna try and drag them, like, get your details straight, you know?
I know. I mean, at least call me by the right letter.
Yeah, get the right, don't erase the B.
Don't
be a B. Don't, because I'm a good Christian, I don't say cuss words, so.
Right. no, it was just so interesting to find that I was a lesbian. That is not a thing that anyone has ever called me. Not that there's anything wrong with it. That's just, that was an interesting jump.
Yeah.
I think my past boyfriends would care to differ, but.
Ayo.
Ayo.
Come on, receipts. But so you and Emily, it was, correct me if I'm wrong. So the Me Too hashtag, like around all these stories that have been happening in Hollywood and in politics where women are coming forward and sharing their stories about being sexually assaulted by various men. And then also on the same time, there's also been, and I'm sure like we can talk about this too, about different men in Hollywood and in just life in general who have been saying like, you know, I was also sexually assaulted at some point.
Right.
So in light of that, there's been a lot of focus on Hollywood, in professional workplaces, in politics, where women and men have been sharing, but mostly women, obviously. Have been sharing their stories about being sexually harassed, assaulted by men. And you and Emily were like, actually, this is something that's been happening in hashtag church too.
Mm-hmm.
And so just talk about like as you guys were like brainstorming on this idea about how you came up with church too. And then what's it been like to see like popular media start to pick it up? Like you guys were in Teen Vogue yesterday.
Yeah, that was so cool. I mean, it's not cool that we're having the conversation, but I'm really glad that, like, after about half a decade of writing about this stuff, that it's really sort of coming to the forefront of conversation, I think largely fueled by the concurrent conversations that are happening regarding Washington and Hollywood and, you know, all of these, you know, just floods of allegations that are coming forth. So, Emily texted me and a couple of other friends on Monday night, like a week and a half ago, and was like, hey, should I out my high school abuser? Which, that was a story that I had known about from the very first time I met Emily. Well, it took a couple months for her to like open up and share because it was a subject of like really deep hurt and pain.
Of course.
And you know, at the time there, we both were so entrenched in dirty culture. There was a lot more to feel ashamed of, you know, now we both realize that she had nothing to be ashamed of, but, that was a hard thing for her to share with me initially. And so I've known about this for about 10 years and, everybody coming forward and kind of like actually naming names was really encouraged her to maybe do that. And I said, you know, honestly, Emily, it's up to you, but like I'll back you 100%. So she did that Monday night. And reading through her story again, like I knew it backwards and forwards. I knew the names of other people who had been abused by the same person who had been groomed.
Wow. And
I had known of them also for 10 years, mm-hmm. and they started to come forward. They found Emily's post on Twitter somehow and started to come forward. And I was like, shit, we need a platform for this because mm-hmm. This is not an isolated incident. In fact, I think it's far more common than we even realize at this point.
Right.
Especially like, I mean, it's really easy to call out the Harvey Weinsteins who are, you know, abjectly awful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the church, well, culture at large, but the church has really sort of fostered a culture that protects abusers and mm-hmm. sort of normalizes it in a way that I'm not sure we've yet come to terms with. So I texted her later that night and I was like, Emily, I'm really proud of you. And also like, this needs to be a thing. Like, how are we going to create this platform?
Mm-hmm.
And we just like riffed off of it, came up with Church 2. I tweeted it that night thinking that I would wake up to, you know, a couple of Twitter friends sharing mm-hmm. their stories in the morning. But by the end of that next day, it had really blown up.
Yeah. It was a flood. Like when I saw it, I was just like,
it was horrifying, but also it felt immensely, I mean, it's the truth. Mm-hmm. It's the truth. And there is something really cathartic about seeing the truth come to light. I think it's really, it's triggering, but it's healing, you know?
Yeah.
So.
It's almost like the image that comes to mind is something like my therapist has said. It's like a lot of times, like, infections can, like, get, like, you know, wounds that get infected and get closed up over are still infected. And so sometimes you have to lance open old wounds
yes.
in order to purge the infection.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Which is disgusting imagery.
Right, right.
But then again, like, this is a disgusting thing. I think something you said that kind of stuck out to me was how churches and kind of church culture, especially, I guess we can speak from our own experience of, like, evangelical culture. And I guess, like, we could even across the board, like, I don't know about, I'm not Catholic myself, but just looking at certain, like, headlines over the years of, like, you know, children being abused by, you know, Catholic faith leaders and,
yep.
and priests. I think you nailed it on the head, is that they have created a system and a culture that protects the most powerful people, as systems often do.
Right.
I was reading one story on the Church Too hashtag where, you know, there was a guy who basically said that he, you know, fantasized about abusing this, like, you know, sexually assaulting this woman, and he got praised for it. And
And
I was like, I read that. I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you know,
in the actual service. Yeah. That was mind blowing to me. And yet reading it was mind blowing. But then as I was picturing how that could happen,
It
absolutely makes sense because
because he was being vulnerable, because he was confessing his sins.
He was confessing. Yes. Yeah.
And like, we never think, like, it's almost just like we never regard women or women's bodies or women's feelings when it comes to things like sexuality or sex in general, because it's just like, you know, women have a specific role to fill. And if they're not fulfilling that role, like, you know, like, it's almost like, oh, women for so much of church history have been disposable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so thankful. Like, I think that, like, we're kind of getting to this point in our history where we're realizing that not only are women not disposable, women have been the backbone of the church the entire time.
And yeah. No, I agree. And I think there were a couple of different people on the hashtag that really brought some important points to light that while this is an issue that tends to primarily affect women, like, we have to take into account, you know, that there are boys and men that are experiencing it, that there are non-binary and transgender people who are experiencing, I mean, even worse within the church, far worse. And then, you know, there's also kind of a racist undercurrent of purity culture, because the paradigm of, like, the perfect woman is this pure, white, middle class, like, the way that the correct woman is described, it ends up having really racist undertones.
Yeah.
And almost like that's an unattainable thing for people of color. And I hate that.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that someone mentioned that as well.
Do you think that, this is something that crossed my mind just now. Within, like, the purity culture movement and the I Kiss Dating Goodbye phenomenon that plagued our childhood, how much of that kind of mindset do you think plays into stories of abuse that we're seeing come to light now?
I think that there is a very clear correlation, although a lot of people have taken me to task on that, on the hashtag. I think that at the core of all of these stories of abuse that we're hearing is theology, you know, that we have built this unattainable goal and really a very anti-body kind of ideology into the church. And so,
yes, you know,
bodily functions are considered gross or dirty. Our, you know, sexual urges are considered gross and dirty, and so there is a need sometimes to get those met in unhealthy ways. Like, I just think when we suppress our God-given sexual urges, and don't treat those like the valuable things that they are, suppression really leads to a lot of everything comes out sideways, you know?
Like, yes.
So, like, it's going to come out somehow. Mm-hmm. And so while I'm not in any way trying to, you know, do any abuse apologism here, what I'm saying is that I think it all comes down to our theology of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we can create a better one, I think that these problems are going to continue.
Yeah. And I think, like, I relate so much to that, like, just as a queer person, how, when I think it was, I can't remember where it was. I actually learned this through my missionary training, is that, like,
nice.
When you suppress something that is so deeply part of who you are, it's almost just like, the way that the person gave me this analogy was, like, it's like pushing a beach ball, like a blown up beach ball, like under the surface of a pool, and then just like you're trying to hold it down, and all of a sudden, like, it slips out of your grasp and shoots out of the water and usually hits somebody else in the face.
Right,
because it's these God-given desires that we're trying to control, and so, like, if we're talking about it in terms of just, like, you know, if we're going to talk, like, you know, like, why abuse is occurring in church settings,
mm-hmm.
it's because, like, we don't have a good theology of our own sexuality, a good theology of our bodies. And again, that's not to justify abuse. That
no.
is just going to say, like, you know, it's like, there's a theology that is contributing to the abuse that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can finally start to address our bodies and have, like, a really... You know what bugs me so much? I don't know if you've heard this recently, but, like, a lot of, like, neo-Calvinists and, like, theobrogens have been, like, yeah, like, saying just, like, you know, this whole LGBTQ movement and, like, this, you know, womanist movement for liberation is all Gnosticism. It's all Gnosticism. It's all about, like...
What?
Yes, someone told
it's
me, like...
It's literally the opposite.
Yes, a completely embodied... It's completely embodied. It's about being more fully in our bodies. It's like,
yes.
to be a person in this world who's
acknowledging
being...
what they really are.
Yes.
And how they operate. That's so funny. What is even their reasoning?
Oh, because they want to throw a big word around and play in the sandbox with all the other kids.
Fair enough.
I
can't listen to neo-Calvinists anymore, but I'm glad you're out there.
In these
the emotional labor for us.
In these streets.
In these theological streets, Kevin.
Oh, my God.
Bless you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. What has it been like for you to see these stories far and wide from, like, across the globe, really?
Yeah.
And start to come up, and then also not only, like, within, like, the microcosm of Twitter, but to have, like, national news sources and, like, big media outlets start to pick up the story and feature the story and then, like, have your names kind of attached to it.
I think it seems like a conversation that is long overdue within the church. I think... to me, while it's been a little bit overwhelming, it's also kind of like, well, duh. I mean,
yeah,
it had to come to the surface at some point. And I don't know, for me, I've definitely sort of stumbled on this very, like, mama bear protective self within me, because, mm-hmm. you know, the more exposure, the more trolls. And so,
100%.
And I am not the sort of human that usually engages trolls. Like, I usually just let that roll right off my back. But, you know, this is not, ultimately, this isn't about me. I feel almost like a little I feel a little bit pastoral towards the people who are coming forward with their stories, because this is, for a lot of people who are sharing their stories, this is the first time that they are confronting this.
Wow.
And that takes an extreme amount of courage, an extreme amount of vulnerability to put that out on the internet, not knowing who will see it or what you will be exposed to. Like, I'm blown away by people's courage.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause this is a conversation that Emily and I have been having for half a decade. And honestly, we've paid a pretty high personal price for it. I mean, we've had a lot of relationships within the church, a lot of personal relationships, a lot of familial relationships kind of fall apart because of being outspoken about this stuff.
Yeah.
And so in a way, I sort of feel like my bridges have been burned.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. I've made peace with that. And so I want to protect those for whom this is their first encounter with this conversation. And right. So it's been extremely overstimulating, but I feel like this is what I was made to do at the same time. So
yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, I'll bet. And also, like, just from, I mean, as your friend and also just as somebody who, I was sexually abused in high school, not in a church setting, but still all the same, as someone who is a survivor, to have somebody else who is, like, standing in the gap for other people, like, that is such a powerful thing for me to see. And I'm not gonna break down crying on this line, but it's one of those things where just like, if it hasn't happened to you, it's just like people just don't know. Like, and you know, I didn't actually start like addressing my own issues around my sexual assault from high school until quite recently. Wow. It was like actually right around when like the Me Too hashtag started. I was like, holy crap, there's other men out there who have experienced the same thing as me.
Right.
And then, but then like to know that like there are so many others that have, you know, you don't want to play oppression Olympics of just like who had it worse, but just cause like every single right. story is about. Right. And I think that's one thing that like, I have heard from some people who said, oh yeah, that happened to me, but I'm never really going to talk about it in a public space. It's because it's like, because they hear all of these, like, you know, horrendous and heartbreaking stories, and they say, like, oh, my story is not going to contribute at all.
It's my story not that bad. Because we gaslight ourselves.
Right. And
think it's not that bad.
For somebody who doesn't know what gaslighting means, can you define that real quick?
Yeah. So I didn't know what it was for a long time. Basically, it's this concept of being made to feel like your experiences, like you're like you are remembering them incorrectly, and so your truth is not actually true. And it's something that I think, unfortunately, the evangelical church is great at.
So good.
And you start to question, did that really happen? Am I overreacting? Am I remembering it differently than it really happened? And I think that has sort of, that is one of the key ways that abusers tend to keep survivors quiet, because they make them feel like that was a normal encounter. That wasn't anything out of the ordinary. That wasn't something you should be reacting like this about.
Mm-hmm. It basically makes the victim feel like they're crazy.
It does. And what's interesting is you start to do it to yourself then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those thoughts start to come without anybody even saying them to you. I mean, I'll say the hard part about having this conversation right now is that I was the victim of sexual assault 2 months ago. And so it wasn't somebody in the church, but it's extremely recent for me. And so at the same time, I'm going through a lot of like traumatic reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where after it happened, I immediately began to gaslight myself. I was like, I put myself in that situation. It probably wasn't that big a deal. I'm remembering it worse than it was. And thankfully, I was staying with a friend who had the balls to ask me straight up the next day if I had been harmed. And I don't know that I would have been able to address it if she hadn't been there, like, right in that moment. And that's how these things get bottled down for decades.
Yeah, for decades. Because I know people who have kept stories that they've never told, like, maybe, like, one person or no people that their entire life. And and then, like, all these years later, I remember I was talking with one person who, you know, it happened to her when she was like, when she was a child. And to this day, you know, she's a grown ass woman. Yeah. And she's like, I don't understand why I'm so upset about this. I don't understand why I'm still upset. I'm just like, I said, because, like, what happened to you was horrible, because that was trauma, because you didn't deserve that. And it's so,
and it doesn't just go away.
Yeah.
Their trauma is something that, you know, the more that I study it, the more that I realize that it's as much physical as it is mental.
Yes.
And so, you know, there's this great book called The Body Keeps the Score, but it really does. I mean, trauma is stored in our bodies, and unless we find a way to release it, it's just going to stay there. Time doesn't heal that, you know?
Yes.
And so it's something that it, at some point we're going to have to confront in order to be whole.
Yes.
And that's my hope with creating this space.
And what's so interesting about it too, is that, talking with my own therapist as I've been working through my own trauma, is how not only, like, trauma is stored in the body, but how the amygdala in our brain, like the low, like the kind of like the more like fight or flight survival mechanisms of our brain, can do things to our memory. Something that I've been struggling with as I've been working through mine is that, like, intellectually, I understand what happened to me. And as I've been working through this, like, I remember, like, beginning to talk about it, and, like, I would come to the part where, like, I know this is about to happen, and my mind just, like, blanks out, but I'm panicked and I'm upset and I'm fearful and I'm frightened, and I'm all these things that, like, I know, like, what happened. So, like, what me and my therapist have kind of surmised is that, like, my mind has, like, blocked out those memories, like, but, like, I know they're still there, because, and, like, the one
they're there, yeah.
But, and then, like, I start, like, and, like, kind of like how you said, just, like, I've begun to sort of gaslight myself in some ways, because, like, it's like, well, if I can't remember it, did it really happen? But, like, if it didn't happen, then why am I so upset about this thing?
Right.
Why is it that anytime I, you know, open my yearbook and see this guy's picture, that I,
it's like a visceral reaction.
Yeah, it's one of these things where just, like, the body does some crazy things in order to protect us. So, like, on the one hand, thank God we have our bodies that help us survive, but at the same time, it's like, it's so so tough to be someone who, like, goes through this sort of thing and, you know, think that you're the only one. And so that's why I think, like, things like Church 2, this hashtag, have been so powerful to see, is, like, it's heartbreaking to see how common it is.
Right.
And then at the same time, it gives me a lot of hope, because I see so much healing. I see that healing is finally possible for so many people.
And that you hit the nail on the head right there, is that, like, my ultimate goal with the Church 2 campaign is that people would feel that they're not alone. I think the most harmful lie that a survivor can believe is that they're alone in it.
Yes.
You know, that they're isolated, that they just have to bear that burden on their own. And, you know, I wanted this, I mean, as silly as it sounds, it's just a hashtag on a website.
Right.
But, I mean, honestly, I've received an entire master's degree worth of education from that goddamn website. So it's real. It's real. Like I every day, I feel like I have a PhD in social studies and culture from from Twitter. But what I wanted more than anything was for church two to be a place where that space could just be held open for survivors. I think what I don't want, and what I tried to articulate from the very beginning, is that I don't want survivors to feel pressured to share. I know that there that was kind of a conversation with you, where people are coming out and saying, you know, just because everybody else is sharing their story, that doesn't mean that I have to. And you're absolutely right. But I have the feeling that there are people reading the Church 2 thread who may never share. I mean, I'll be they're in my DMs. Like, they're telling me what they can't tell the internet, and I respect that. I honor that. I honor the fact that they would be willing to be vulnerable, even just to one person, even just to me. And I made myself available for that, because maybe there isn't anybody else willing to do that emotional labor for them. But yeah.
That is like a big point, I think. I mean, like, you and me are kind of like internet people, I guess, if you will, 'cause so it's one of those things. I think it just, like, I don't know if it's like how we're built, or maybe the time period in which we grew up and where, like, we feel very comfortable, like, disclosing and sharing our lives on the internet. I mean, honestly, that's how you and
That's
me and Emily all met. It
how we met,
was
right?
praise the Lord. And you know what's so interesting too, is like to kind of like bring this full circle, is like the first time I ever heard about Emily was through the Thank God I'm a Virgin video.
Really?
Yes, that's
Oh
how I
my
got plugged in
God,
with her.
that's
So
so good. Everybody go listen to that. If you are listening to this podcast, you need to go watch Emily Joy's Thank God I'm a Virgin video on YouTube. It will fuck you up.
seriously, the whole album.
The whole album. I mean, I'm her best friend and I'm a total stan.
Oh, like, that's the thing about just, like, you know what's so incredible is, like, having friends who, like, you hang out with them and, like, you can drink wine and watch the Kardashians and, like, sit around a fire and be normal, and then just, like, oh my gosh, you're such a talented artist, speaker, revolutionary person at the same time.
I
And
know. It's so exciting.
yeah. Not to derail us, so but to pivot slightly though, because I could gush over all of our friends.
Oh, definitely.
One
We have
thing
some good ones.
we really do,
It's kind of outrageous.
are we just, like, so hashtag blessed?
Amen. Hallelujah.
The thing I have noticed so much, when looking at the Church 2 hashtag, in addition to all the stories of freedom that are coming forward and abusers getting named and outed, is, like, some pushback from,
Yeah.
your typical, white cis Christian male, who is saying, "That's not my experience. This is untrue." The guy who actually called you, named you and Emily as the yoga teacher and the lesbian, like I said, like, I remember, like, going through, like, this, like, exchange he had with, I think it was, like, Stephen Carter or somebody else on.
Oh, might have been, yeah.
But he like, he literally, like, ended it with, like, "Well, that's not my experience." It was really
Oh,
shocking
my
to me.
fave, my fave.
Just like, it's and I wanted to say this, like, your experience is kind of irrelevant. But that's not even where I wanted to go with it. But just a point to say, just, like, what's so frustrating to me is just, like, why would anyone make this up?
Right. Like,
Like,
what do we stand to gain from making this stuff up? Like, this is no. It's not like a marketing campaign or something. We're
yeah.
literally telling horrifying stories about our lives. I mean, yeah. And what's so interesting to me about the, you know, your standard, we call it husband father Twitter.
The husband, father, Jesus follower, chief of sinners Twitter.
real.
Craft beer and whiskey, C.S. Lewis.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Pastor of insert X trendy name community. what I find interesting about them is how dismissive they can be of experiences that don't directly relate to them. Mm. Or even, it might be petty, Kevin, but like the white cis male pastors who are like, oh my God, church too is so upsetting. I have a daughter. And I'm like, what if you didn't? Would you still be upset about this? Like, yes, of course, like, you want your daughter to be protected, but, like, A, of all, she ain't your property, bruh.
Hey.
B, like, are you unable to care about something that doesn't directly relate to you? I mean, I guess I understand why misogyny and racism are such a deep and integral part of the evangelical church, then, you know?
Come on, pastor.
I'm tired of it.
Yeah. So in that same line of thinking, for people who are in church leadership, pastors, across this country, and abroad and wherever, like, how should leadership and pastors in churches be responding to stories like these?
You know, that's a question that I've been asked a lot, and, I thought I didn't have a good answer for it, but I think it's because I don't have one set answer for everyone. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all response here.
Of course.
I think that across the board, survivors are telling their stories, so you need to fucking listen. Like, you need to tune your ears and shut your mouth. But at the same time, like, the silence has been deafening to me with, like, oh my God, there have been so many articles released on Christian publications this week speaking about sexual assault in the church without naming or even referencing this viral hashtag.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, you got to confront what's directly in front of you. Like, if you're not speaking about this from the pulpit, how do you expect change to happen?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's hard. I'm an ex-evangelical. I have no intentions of ever returning back to any form of organized church. Emily is, you know, a part of an Episcopal congregation. And so I think that there are a variety of good responses. What I don't want to see is I don't want to see the white cis male or female pastors of the world saying, I have the answers, let me fix this. No. Like, survivors will get the emotional labor that they need from one another, and you don't need to be the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
What I do think is that congregations need to have a much more active and vibrant way of addressing sexual assault within their churches. I've seen some congregations talking about doing the consent pledge. I've seen some talking about having sexual assault training for their staff. And I think all of that is well and good. Although at the same time, for me, if you're not willing to address the theology that is at the root of these abuse allegations, then for me, you're sort of cutting a weed without getting at the root. And
ooh, come
that
on,
does
metaphor.
Not satisfy me, you know?
Yeah, it's again, it's like it's putting a band-aid over a gaping wound.
Exactly.
Something that just kind of just played up in my mind is actually a passage from scripture, since, you know, we are Christians. But it's like, so there's a passage in, I actually was just talking about it with George McHale about church clarity. And we were talking about the thing where Jesus said, I did not come to bring peace, but a sword to divide father from son and mother from daughter. And then he goes on further to say in that scripture, just like, you can look at the sky and you can predict the weather, but you can't interpret the times.
Interesting.
Like,
wow.
And Jesus said this, like, you can predict the weather, but you can't interpret the times. Like, you can't see what's even right in front of your freaking face. And, like, that's the KGV, the Kevin Garcia version. You know what? I'm gonna write my own freaking paraphrase.
I need a whole Bible in the KGV, please.
You know what? Leviticus is just going to have, like, a big asterisk over just, like, y'all.
No.
I don't even
y'all
know.
Y'all know.
You know.
No one cares.
Jesus. But like that's the whole, like the, that's that what's it's so upsetting to me, just like across the board, like from racism to LGBTQ issues to women to issues of sexual assault. What bothers me about kind of like mainstream evangelical culture and Christian culture across the board, who like refuse to acknowledge things like the church too hashtags, like we'll talk about sexual assault, but we're not going to talk about the thing that literally the entire internet is talking about
in front of your damn face.
If Teen Vogue is more relevant than Christianity Today, what's happening?
I know. I mean, I like, will say there was a really devastating story that was shared on Relevant today, and I never thought I was going to share a Relevant article again, but they allowed somebody to tell their church too story like head on, and it was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for the most part, it has not been even confronted by church leaders, and that breaks my heart.
And it's so interesting to me. It's just like all these pastors are just like, we want to be on the cutting edge. We want to, like, I remember like one person said, like, I want to have the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other. I'm just like, bitch, prove it.
Yeah, it's right here.
You know, like we're here and we're more than willing to talk. I mean, we could go on and on about that. God, I had something I wanted to touch on.
Okay.
What was it? We were talking about how do pastors respond. We were talking about how people don't have to do that. I don't know. Oh, gosh. I guess, like, there's so many directions I could take this, and I know that we're also, like, running a little short on time. Let me ask you this. Like, as someone who is working through your own trauma right now, and also I'm so sorry, and also I'm so thankful that you are here and you're working through this and willing to do this work publicly, because that is like to work while bleeding out of your side, you know, to have your heart ripped out and like work while bleeding, like that takes an immense amount of courage, and I'm thankful that you're willing to do it for people and for yourself.
Thank you.
For people who are maybe confronting their trauma for the first time, or people who have yet to confront their own trauma, what do you think is like some good steps for them to take?
People who have yet to confront it.
Yeah. Or are confronting it for the first time.
I think that there has to be such a delicate balance between being gentle with yourself and also, like you said, lancing the wound.
Mm-hmm.
I think that not doing it alone is huge.
Yes.
I think that when my own trauma occurred, I immediately gathered my community around me. And mm-hmm. I just, you know, there was no room for pride. There was no room for going it alone, lone wolfing it. Like, I circled my family around me and said, look, I'm gonna need y'all. And so I think it's really key to create that space with whoever your family is, whether it's your blood family, whether it's friend family, your chosen family. I would say that mine is a pretty solid mix of both.
Mm-hmm.
That you need to circle the wagons and surround yourself so that when you fall apart, there will be someone to fall back on. And I mean, that's church.
Yes.
Like that's what that's supposed to be. And so wherever your church is, circle them around you. Therapy is really important. Like at the end of the day, your friends, dear as they may be and great listeners as they may be, they are not qualified to heal your trauma for you. I'm not qualified to heal your, nobody is. But you seeking professional help is honestly a strength, being able to say, hey, I don't got this. And I need assistance is really a strength. And I would say, take it a day at a time. I mean, just like you've been doing, Kevin, like you can't confront it all in one day, and forcing yourself to is not is not helpful. What I will say is reject the lies of shame and guilt that will try to make you feel like you are somehow less worthy or less valuable, because those are lies. And you need to confront them for what they are, whether they're coming from someone outside of you or whether they're coming from your very own brain. You need to be able to tell them no. And maybe that's all you can say. Maybe all you can say is no or reject that in that moment. I really think it's a thing that has to be taken a day at a time. One amazing thing that happened, I was crowdsourcing dating advice because post-trauma dating is really, really challenging.
Of course.
Because your brain is just firing in ways that it never has before, and it's very off-putting to not know what your own reactions are going to be in any given scenario. And I was talking through that with some friends, and my friend Emily Maynard, who is just a constant source of wisdom, said, you know what? You may not be able to have your old intuition and your old instincts, but you have yours now, and they are dependable, and you still have to listen to them. And so, you know, whoever you are in the wake of your trauma is good and dependable and worth listening to. You are not to blame, and your instincts are still good. And that was huge for me, because I feel different and I feel less able to date or to put myself out there, and you know, I feel unsafe and paranoid all the time. But that's okay. Those are reasonable reactions to trauma. I think that's all I got.
That's good stuff, Hannah.
I'm going through it too, you know?
Yeah. And for anyone out there who's listening and you say like, well, I can't afford therapy, I will say, girl, yes, that is the truth. Let me tell you what, how many times, like, I had a therapist, I had to switch therapists because he no longer had a sliding scale.
But you know what? You gotta find those sliding scales.
Sliding scales are real. So, like, if you're near a place that has a university or something, there's a lot of, sometimes psychology students who have their practices around there, so they're they're supervised, but they are still really good qualified individuals who can help you at discounted rates. There's things like Talkspace, where you can actually talk to a therapist through your phone or through text message. There are community centers that have it as a service. So it's just a matter of doing your research and figuring out, like, you know, it might not be in your town, but it might be digital through your phone. It might not be, you know, for free, but it might be at a discounted rate. And I honestly, from one person who I do not make a lot of money, and I'm paying, how much money? $280 a month. To see my therapist at least once a week for 50 minutes, I can tell you, yeah, I could pay rent with that. I could pay part of my rent with that money. Yeah. But the ability to work through my trauma and be able to relate better to myself, to my partner, to my friendship group, that kind of progress, that kind of freedom, you can't put a price tag on that.
It's really true. It's really true. And I mean, you're calling me out as you say this, Kevin, because since moving back to Phoenix, I have not found a therapist. And so if you live in the Phoenix area, I am working on this too, and I can let you know my findings. But it's definitely worth looking into the sliding scales. There's a place that has a sliding scale in your city, I'm sure.
For sure.
So, just get on your Google machine.
Get on your Google machine. Put it on Facebook. Put it on Twitter. You know what? You know, tweet at us. We will help. We'll crowdsource it. There's plenty of people.
For real.
Hannah, thank you so much for sitting down with me to have this conversation. Thank you for your bravery. You and Emily both for being such badass women who are, you know, working in the world, making waves, and causing, you know, it's the goddamn revolution.
It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, may it happen in our time, Lord Jesus.
Yes. Yes. Amen.
That was my conversation with my friend Hannah Pash. You can find her on the internet everywhere at Hannah Pash, which is HannahPaash. Try spelling that 5 times fast. And you can also find her other Instagram account over on Instagram, obviously, at Garbage Oprah. Yes, you heard me right, and it's spelled exactly like it sounds. Hannah, thanks so much for sitting down with me. I really appreciate it, girl. You're a gem. I want to give a big shout out to all of my Patreon supporters for making today's episode possible. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for everyone who joined in the month of November. We had an increase of, I believe, $135 and like 8 new patrons, which is crazy to me. Like, how amazing is that? That people find work like this worthy of financial support. And honestly, it really does help because I am an independent creative, which means that I don't have the backing of something like Blue Apron or Talkspace.com or anything like that. I'm just a normal guy working a normal job, and there are production costs associated with creating podcasts and blogs and videos and all the other fun stuff that I create. So if you think conversations like this are important, if you think that they're life-giving to our community and are challenging the status quo, I'd love for you to become a sustaining partner. It's very simple. You just go to patreon.com/thekevingarcia and learn about all the sweet perks that are associated with it. That's including phone calls with me once a month if you're giving at a certain level. It includes free t-shirts. It includes a newsletter. It includes getting your name at the end of credits. There's like so many dope things. So not only are you giving something, but you're also getting something in return. For example, my most recent perk that I launched is called the Reconnect Daily Devotional, and it's a daily devotional series that gets sent straight to your inbox. It's really quick, and it also helps you reconnect with scripture, prayer, and even maybe implementing a practice of meditation. So if that's something that's up your aisle, or you just want to give back to the things that you love, if you think this podcast is worth $1, $2, $10 a month, you can go to patreon.com and become a sustaining partner today. Another way that you can support this podcast is by rating it on iTunes. Simply go to your podcast app, open it up, and leave a quick rating. 5 stars would be great, and then tell us what you think about it. Tell me what you think about it. And on top of that, if you want to drop me a line, you can do that at thekevingarcia.com. I'd love to hear your feedback, connect with you. And if you have any ideas about what you'd like to see or hear on the videos or podcast or on the blog, I'd love to get your feedback there. Again, that's at thekevingarcia.com. Before I run, I wanted to let you know that we do have a couple new designs up in the t-shirt shop. So you can go to thekevingarcia.com and click merch, and it'll take you directly to the Queerly Beloved t-shirt shop. We have sweaters now. Everything is stocked up. Everything is drop shipping. And between now and the 15th, orders over $45 are getting free shipping. So that's like, what, 2 sweaters, maybe 3 sweaters, depending on what you're getting. And they're cute and fun, and they're supporting queer artists out there in the world. Me and my friend Donnie Sherlegit. It's Sherschlit, but I like calling him Sherlegit. So anyways, go to thekevingarcia.com/merch. Get yourself a nice, ugly Christmas sweater. There's actually one that says, make the Yuletide gay. And that's funny as hell. I don't care who you are. And one more time before I go, if this episode brought any emotions up that you need help processing, call a friend, call your spiritual director, your pastor, your circle of trust, rally them around you, call your therapist, and process these things in a healthy way. Don't let this stuff bottled up, because you deserve to be living a beautiful, unburdened life. So go ahead, take care of yourself, okay? That is all from me. Be sure to connect with me across all social media at The Kevin Garcia, on the blog, thekevingarcia.com, on YouTube, Instagram, Twitters, Facebooks, all the things. I would love to be connected with you. And I think that is everything from me. Thank you again so much for listening. Go see your therapist, drink some water, drink a little bit of coffee. Go to a party tonight. Shake a groove thing. Go dancing. You need that, and you deserve it. And if dancing is not your thing, and you're an introvert, stay at home. Watch a movie. Light a candle. Get in the bubble bath with a glass of champagne, because also, you deserve it. I love you. I really do. And I will talk to you soon. My name is Kevin Garcia. This has been another episode of A Tiny Revolution. And I'm thankful for who you are. Talk soon, okay? Bye.